Okay. Good morning, everyone. Today's daf in Yevamos Kuftes Vav. Mom, we're about to start the 15th parak of the Masechta, but let's finish up. We are in the 14th parak of Yevamos, and we just have one more case that we need to go through. It's a very important topic the Gemara has been discussing over the last daf, which is half of the 14th parak. 14th parak is two dapim. So the one half of the daf is dedicated to the topic of see a katan. You see a minor who is about to violate Yisurim. So are you a concerned adult? So are you responsible to stop him from Yisurim? That is the Gemara's question. By Yisuri de Rabbanan, it is more or less a no-brainer. The Gemara says no. You have no obligation to stop him from violating Yisuri de Rabbanan. Yisuri de Raisa, that's what's open for the discussion of the Gemara. Gemara went through a lot of cases where it seems pretty clear from a number of different contexts, Bryce's Mishnayos that we quote throughout Shas, that you do not have an obligation to stop him. The Rambam says that even by Yisuri D'Oraisa, right? I looked it up. The Rambam says even by Yisuri D'Oraisa, you don't have an obligation to stop a katan who's going to violate Nisr. You can't feed the katan Nisr and Biyadayim, that the Gemara says time and again yesterday, but to stop him from violating Nisr, that you don't have to do. The Rambam does, however, point out that there's a difference between a third party and the parent. Actually, the Rambam writes specifically the father. Father does have an obligation to stop his own child from violating Yisurim, but the Rambam makes a distinction between the father and anybody else. To be fair, and to just note, in yesterday's Gemara, didn't seem like the Gemara made a distinction, which we're about to finish up, didn't seem like the Gemara made a distinction between the father and somebody else, but the Rambam does strike such a distinction.
There's no obligation by recommendation, or is there no recommendation?
Yeah. There's no... The sense you get is that no, you don't have to. There's not even it's not even recommended. In other words, you see a minor who's violating Yisurim, so it doesn't seem that way, right? Okay.
You have a father has a chinuch of an obligation. That's why it makes a distinction.
Right. Well.
Other people don't.
Right. I mean, Rabbi Rabinovich spoke about this. Spoke about this topic, and he gave analysis on the Rambam's position that this distinction between father and other people. But okay. Anyway, that's the general topic that we've been discussing. We just have to finish up the Toshma. It's eight lines before the parak comes to a conclusion, and what the Gemara did is it brought a proof from our Mishnah. Now our Mishnah is not talking about Ketan, and our Mishnah is talking about a Cheresh, but it's the same basic idea. It's somebody who's not obligated in Torah mitzvos, a Cheresh, as they are deaf mute, which means that they don't have the mental faculty, and therefore they're not obligated in Torah mitzvos. So do you have to stop them from violating Yisurim? So the Gemara says, well, look at the case of the Mishnah. Let's just jump right into the Gemara. Tashma, Shnei Achin, Echad Cheresh, Echad Pikeach. You have two brothers, one's Cheresh, one's Pikeach. Nesulun Shtei Achayos, Echad Pikeachas, V'Achas Cheresh. And married to two sisters, one's a Pikeach, and the other Cheresh. And let's assume, which is what the Mishnah is talking about, that Matzah Minas Mino, that everyone married the one who was most compatible to them, the Cheresh married the Chereshes, and the Pikeach married the Pikachas. What happens if one of the brothers dies? That's what the Mishnah deals with. Meis Cheresh ba Chereshes, Mayas the Pikeach ba Pikachas. So if the Rabbanan marriage, if the husband of the Rabbanan marriage dies, and now exposing his wife to the mitzvah of Yibum, so what happens? Teitzeh Mishamachos Ishto. Nothing happens, meaning good. She is the sister-in-law, but she's not only the sister-in-law because she was married to the brother of the surviving brother, but she's also the sister-in-law because she's his wife's sister. So that's called Erva. There's an exemption. But let's go the other way. Let's say that we have a scenario where the Doraisa marriage terminates because he, the man of the Doraisa marriage, dies. So now, what does the Cheresh Ba Chereshes have to do? Two things, unfortunately. So he has to divorce his wife. And on top of that, his Eshes Achiv, his sister-in-law, is forbidden to him forever. Okay, and again, just we've gone over this number of times, but let's say it out. The reason why both have to happen is because regarding his own wife, his wife now is Acho Zekukaso, the Zika, the candidacy of Yibum for his sister-in-law now is a Dinda Araisa. His marriage to his wife is only a Dinda Rabbanan. So Acho Zekukaso, he has to divorce his wife. He can marry his sister-in-law because his sister-in-law now is Achus Grusha, so it's a sister of his Grusha. So he's in an unfortunate position. Now wonders the Gemara. Now let's think about this. Now the Gemara says, I don't understand. In this particular scenario, in this case, so why not maintain the relationship, the marriage? What's the problem? The problem is he's violating an Isser. That's why we don't maintain the marriage. He's a Chayresh, he's not obligated in mitzvos. She, the wife, is a Chayresh, she's not obligated in mitzvos. So when you see someone who is involved in Isser, do you have to stop them from a katan or a chayresh? If you see somebody involved in this, do you have to stop them from violating Yisurim? So the Gemara was arguing for the entire daf. Yeah. You don't have to stop them. It sounds like from the Mishnah, you do have to stop them. The Mishnah says they need a divorce. Why else would they need a divorce other than the fact that you have to stop someone from violating an Isser, even somebody who's not obligated, like a chayresh? And again, like I mentioned yesterday, the Gemara is comparing a chayresh to a katan in this regard. V'ktani motzi tisha beget. Okay, so Amar Rav Shmaya. So Rav Shmaya says, no. There's actually another reason why the Chachamim demand the two of them to get a divorce. En achinami. In other words, if it was just the Isurim that they're going to be violating, to that, the Gemara is now arguing that's not enough that would warrant a divorce. They could have remained married. She's Achuz Kukaso, his wife is Achuz Kukaso, and Isser, I think we've been calling it a Durabanan for the majority of the Masechta, but whatever. In other words, it's an Isser. So yes, it's an Isser for him to be with his wife, but in other words, for that reason in of itself, he's a Chayresh, she's a Chayresh, the marriage could have maintained. The problem is, Gzeira, in other words, the rabbis were concerned. And what were they concerned about? Mishum Matars Yavam L'Shuk. Because of the heter of Yavam L'Shuk. What does that mean? If you take a look at Rashi writes, the Iyamin taste of Chayresh is Gabi Chayresh. Look, let's imagine that the marriage would have maintained. Okay? And again, for us now learning the daf, we know the reason why the marriage couldn't maintain. He's not obligated in mitzvahs and she's not obligated in mitzvahs. But for the populace who's watching this, what are they going to think? So Rashi goes on to say, Lo yadin shi taima mishum kat nochel nevelasu. So people don't know the real reason why the marriage can maintain. It was savrei de kedushin di day dachulei lezika. So they're going to think, oh, I know why. Because their kedushin, their marriage, is going to uproot the zika. Which is not true, but again, we're not talking about what's true, we're talking about what people will think. The perception is that the marriage is going to uproot the Zika. Dipikachas achosa. V'ein bo achosu kukoso. Hilchach asu lemishre lachosu l'shuk kishar achos isha shepetur mina chalitza. And they're therefore going to assume, oh, yivam l'shuk. I don't know why she right now is much of the shuk. The only thing I can think about is because the marriage is pushing off the Zika. And for some reason she doesn't need chalitza. Okay, I'm not fully understanding why. This is a popular perception, but a yavama can just simply go away and marry somebody else, and it would lead to that kind of false perception. And so for that reason, the chachamim say that this marriage has to be terminated. But not for the reason of katan ochel nevelos. So the Gemara, without arriving at a conclusion, the Gemara then spent the entirety of yesterday's daf discussing whether or not when you see a katan, or in this case a cheresh, violating your sword, do you have to interject, do you have to stop? So the Gemara left the discussion unresolved in terms of whether you do. Again, for the Rabbanans, the Gemara is very clear that you don't have to stop them from violating your sword, the Rabbanan, for the Araisas. So that the Gemara left up for an open-ended discussion. But as I mentioned, the Rambam says that even for Daraisis, you don't have to separate from him from Yisurim. Okay, 15th parak of the Masechta. Okay, the 15th parak of the parak is called the Isha Shalom. Okay, Isha Shalom. Usually, the name of the parak is named after the first couple words of the first Mishnah of the parak. HaIsha Shahalcha. Why is it called the Isha Shalom? Well, you'll see. That's the theme of this parak. There are three parakim entitled Isha, right? The first one we saw already earlier in the Masechta. That's Isha Rabbah. That's the 10th parak of the Masechta that discussed the topic of a ne'emanus of one witness coming and testifying that the husband died and her ability to marry again. Then there is Aisha Shalom. That's the parak that we're learning right now. And then we're going to do one more parak that involves Isha, Aisha Basra. The last parak of Isha. Okay, so three parakim entitled Ha'isha. Ha'isha Shahacha, I'm sorry, before we start with the Mishnah, let's go over what we already saw before, what we already know. We know that if a one witness comes back and testifies that that the man died, so based on that testimony of one witness, the wife now can go ahead and can remarry. However, with a high risk. And that is that if her husband shows up again, so then she's going to have to get a divorce from her first husband, her second husband, and many penalties that are mentioned in the 10th parak of the Masechta. Okay, but without focusing on the penalties, just focusing on the din, that she can get married based on the testimony of one witness, what is that? So that's a little bit strange. Generally speaking, in order to establish anything in halacha, you need two witnesses. So how can one witness believe? So there's the answer. There's the Gemara's answer, and then there's the Rishonim's answer. The Gemara's answer was aguna, meaning we don't want a woman to be an aguna. So therefore, we're going to extend her a halachic benefit that, generally speaking, is not extended, and therefore we're going to believe one witness over on the fact that her husband is in fact dead. Okay, that's the Gemara's answer. Then the Rishonim are wondering, okay, that's a beautiful answer, but mechanically, how does that work? What's behind that position? So the Rishonim spend some significant time trying to figure out how that works from a halachic standpoint. How can the Chachamim can just simply come along and negate a marriage that Minotaur is presumably not negated? Okay, which we're not going to go over right now, but okay, you understand. Those are the larger issues of the discussion. What we're going to learn in this parak is as follows. Not only is one witness believed about the death of her husband, she's believed about the death of her husband. She and her husband go away on a trip. She comes back. There's not a single other witness. All we have is her testimony. She's going to be believed that her husband's dead, and she'll be able to marry based on her very own testimony. As we'll see in the course of this parak, the consequences, the risk that she's putting herself in, is going to be basically the same. That in the event that her husband comes back, takes a mizu mizu, she's going to have to get a divorce from both, and all the penalties that were laid out in the 10th parak. But the big chiddush in our parak is that she is even believed over the death of her husband. However, this is where it's going to get tricky, and this is really going to be the entirety of today's daf. She's not going to be believed in every circumstance, meaning that the environment has to be correct, has to be right, and you'll see what I mean in just a moment as we're about to start the Mishnah. The environment has to be right in order for her to be believed. If there are extenuating circumstances, if there is suspicion. The suspicion that she is not being forthright and honest, so then she's not going to be believed. And as we go through the parak, we're going to see exactly what it takes for her to be believed. The Mishnah is going to discuss it right away. So this is going to be our topic for today and for the for a good part of the 15th parak of the Masechta. A woman goes away with her husband overseas. Shalom beino levina v'shalom ba'olam. And there's peace between her and her husband, and there's peace also in the world. So there's marital tranquility, and there's world tranquility. Now, by the way, when we say world tranquility, we don't mean peace over the entire world. Okay, I don't know, right? I don't know if that's feasible, but what there is wherever they went, there was peace. Okay, there was nothing, there was no war going on in the area that they went to. Okay, Uba v'amra, and she comes back and she says, Meis Bali, she says that her husband's dead, her husband died, Tinase. She can get married based on that testimony of that which she said. Okay. We can certainly understand without going any further in the Mishnah. Well, let me just read three more words. Meis Bali Tisyabim. Okay, and she's also believed to say that her husband's dead in order to enable her to do the mitzvah of Yibum, meaning that there were no children, and there's a surviving brother, and she's now going to do the mitzvah of Yibum with her surviving brother. Okay, now let's pause over here at this point in the Mishnah. Let's think about this Mishnah out loud. Certainly, one can understand that there's a requirement to have peace between her and her husband, marital tranquility. Because if there is a marital tranquility, so one can easily envision that what she's going to do is that she went away on a trip. She's not that particularly fond of her husband. We could say it even more forcefully than that. She's fighting with her husband. And so she's going to come back, and she, even if her husband's not actually dead, but even if there is a suspicion that he died, she's going to jump at the opportunity, and she's going to leap to assumptions. And so therefore, under those circumstances, she's not afforded the credibility that her husband's dead. That's certainly clear. What about the second point in the Mishnah, which is that there also has to be peace in the world, meaning that the region that they go to has to have a state of peace. Why in that circumstance is that required? Why is it that if there's Rashi is going to use the terminology of Shas Cheirum, okay, which unfortunately in Israel that's a term you hear. So if it's Shas Cheirum, if it's if there's turmoil in the area that they're in, so why then is she not believed? So Rashi, I'm going to read the Rashi together, but you're going to see this idea come up again and again through the Gemara. So Rashi explains. We're going to see the first Rashi in the Mishnah. Shein shas cherem detema bididami me omed liba. So Rashi writes, because if they're going to a place which is war-torn, so what's going to happen is she also is going to leap to assumptions. In other words, in an area where it's not calm, where there's war, where there's fighting, so she's going to get, she'll basically be able to get away, not actually visually confirming that her husband's dead. The Gemara is going to give us a scenario in which, let's say, she saw her husband get wounded. Right, Gemara's not going to talk about gunshot, but he got shot, he got speared, right? He saw husband get stabbed, and it's war torn. So what she's going to do, because it is a war torn area, is she's going to make an assumption. The Rashi uses the terminology of bid the dummy. She will think, oh, I think my husband's dead over here. And not only will she think her husband's dead, but she'll then go to that conclusion. In other words, she'll be able to escape. She'll wait a month, she'll wait 2 months. You know, I escaped, but my husband didn't make it. I didn't see him die, but I can only assume that he died. The whole of Alav Shas Chayrim, Elav Chazise Demes Chayshal Kikula Shamayav Alachar Shnitzes V'Teimu Kukalas Kedam Rabbi Sharaba. Rashi reminds us that if her husband's not dead and the husband comes back, so she's going to be suffering all these penalties. V'lo Amra V'Dedami. If there is no war, and there's no, and it's not a shas cheirum, so then she's only going to say that her husband's dead if she actually has visual confirmation that her husband's dead. But if they're going to an area where there's war, so then she will then leap to an assumption. So basically, we're going to hear this again and again throughout today's daf. The distinction we're going to make is as follows. If everything is calm, the marriage and the area where they go to, so then if she's saying her husband's dead, that means her husband's actually dead. It means she saw that her husband actually died. If, however, there's something of discord, either the marriage or the place they go to, so then, excuse me. Yeah.
When there's a discord, she's coming and saying that.
Wait. I'm sorry to stop you so early. The Gemara is going to discuss what our default assumption is going to be, both about the marriage and the place they go to.
Yeah, but about the discord, why don't you say that she would be concerned about all these penalties if she hasn't seen that her husband is dead, and she's just because of discord she's saying that, then she's going to be for sure facing all these penalties. Why would she?
No, because I'm sorry, because the fighting is going to is going to move her to a position that may not be totally honest, but in other words, she wants so much to get out of this marriage. It's funny. This parak really is, I mean, it's not a psychology textbook, but it's like, it's going to be a lot of psychology today. In terms of trying to figure out, you know, when she's forthright and honest versus when she's, you know, she's going to bend and extend the truth because, you know, she wants out.
And then she's willing to face all these penalties.
And yeah, in other words, again, if there's fighting, okay, and I know I'm at risk, but I'm not particularly happy with this marriage right now. Okay, so I'll say something that's not perfectly and totally true. Look, we were in a war-torn area, and I saw him get shot. Well, I didn't see anything after that, but I didn't like him anyway. Okay, yeah, right. That's basically what we're going to try to figure out. The Mishnah goes on. We're back to the Mishnah. Shalom beinu levena u'melchama ba'olam. Ketata beinu levena v'shalom ba'olam. If either one of those two get upset, meaning either the marriage or the area that they turned to, or that they went to, so then ubasav amra meis bali, and she comes back and she says that her husband's dead. Eina ne'emenes. She's not believed. Rabbi Yehuda omer la'olam eina ne'emenes alim kim ba'ata bocha. Rabbi Yehuda has an interesting opinion, which is that in order for her to ever be extended credibility, she has to come back, she has to be crying, and her clothing has to be torn, meaning at a shiva. Otherwise, we don't believe. Amrullah, they said to Rabbi Yehuda, no, we don't need the drama. Meaning, all we need to know is that was there peace between her and her husband? Was there peace in the area that they went to? That's all we need to know. She does not have to be dramatic when she comes back and reports the death of her husband. Okay. Tana. The Gemara's first discussion is going to be what is our default assumption? Meaning, in our Mishnah, we know that there's a very basic distinction between peace versus war, both in the marriage and in the area that they went to. What do we assume? It's not clear for the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, well, if there's peace between the two of them, then she's believed. Sounds like from that part of the Mishnah, we have to know that there was peace. Then the Mishnah goes on to say, and if we're fighting, she's not believed. Well, that means what? We know that they were fighting. What if we don't have any information? What if she comes back and she says, my husband's dead, and we simply do not know? How was the marriage? Marriage was going well, marriage was not. What's the default position? That's what the Gemara now is going to address. Tana shalom bein olaveina, mishum dekabai lemifte ketata bein olaveina. Tana shalom ba'olam, mishum dekabai lemifte mechama ba'olam. Gemara says that the first statement of the Mishnah is there just as a foil for the second statement of the Mishnah. Meaning, we don't need to know. Yeah, I know. We don't need to know that there was a harmony in the marriage. We'll assume that. That will be the default assumption. We don't need to know that there was no war in the place they went to. We'll assume that. The only time we want to assume that is if we have positive knowledge to the contrary. But the default assumption is the marriage is going well. The default assumption is there's no war in the area that they went to. I'm a Rava, my time in the Mechama. So Rava says, let's understand this a little bit better. Now, I know we went through this in Rashi, but good. The Rashi got it from the Gemara. So Rava says, let's understand this a little bit better. If they went to a war-torn area, why is it that she's not believed? Mishum de Amra b'dedami. So because she's going to say, it appears to me that he died. Meaning without actually having visual confirmation that her husband's dead, she's going to leap to that assumption. Saka daka, she's going to think, Hani de ikta hu palit? Everyone else is dying, and my husband survived. There's no way he could have survived, and she will therefore arrive at the assumption and the conclusion that her husband's dead, even though she didn't see her husband dead, and that's true during Shas Mechama. As again, going back to the Rashi of the Mishnah, if it's Shas Shalom, if it's a time of peace, she won't jump to that conclusion. She's only going to provide information that her husband's dead if she actually saw her husband died. In Tim Salama Kevin to Shalom Bainolaveina, and if there's peace between the two of them, Nacho Adachazia, Zimun de Machule Begira, Oberumcha, Usvar Vadai Mace, the Ika de Avit Samatre Vichaya. And even if there's peace between the two of them, but she saw her husband get wounded, doesn't know what happened, she escaped, husband didn't. She's going to assume that the husband died. And meanwhile, says the Gemara, Iga David Samatri, some people know how to perform magic. Right, not magic. It's called medicine. Iga David Samatri, Vichaya, and he lived. So again, the problem is that if it's a war-torn area, and she was able to escape, but she didn't see what happened to her husband, she'll assume that her husband died. And again, not for a bad reason. Husband got wounded, but not realizing that her husband could have survived. Okay. Sever Avalameima Ravon. Okay, period. Good. That's the basic understanding of the Mishnah and the distinction laid forward where she is believed and where she's not believed. She's believed in a scenario where there's shalom between her and her husband and the area that they went to. She's not believed if either one of those gets disrupted.
So why does she wants out of the marriage?
No, it's if, in other words, again, if the marriage is in discord, she's going to want out of the marriage to the point where she will make an assumption that her husband's dead, even though she didn't see her husband die. If the marriage is in good condition, she will only report it if she actually saw her husband's dead. She had visual confirmation. Basically, what the Chachamim are doing right now are trying to figure out, when will she say something only because she saw the death, or where she's going to leap to a conclusion. And if the assumption is that she's going to leap to a conclusion, so then she's not afforded that credibility. Okay. Sava Rav Lameimah Ravon in a Kamachama. Delo Amra B'Dedami. Okay. Now, what we're going to be doing for a while now in the Gemara is taking a look at other situations. Our Mishnah is only focusing on Mechama as being a critical factor in whether determining she's telling the absolute truth or she may be stretching the truth a little bit. Jumping to an assumption. So the Gemara says, what about Ravon? What if it's a famine? They came from an area that was famine-torn. Okay, there was a famine there. So Rava thought that famine is not like Mechama. Delo Amra B'Dedami. If they come back from an area which is famine, again, somehow she escaped. Her husband did not. She didn't see her husband die. Are we going to assume that she will only report her husband's death if she saw it? Or will she leap to a conclusion? So Rava initially thought she's not going to leap to a conclusion. Rava then changed his viewpoint based on an anecdote. Hadam Rava Ravon Areka Mechama. So Rava then changed his tune. He said, no, Ravon is like Mechama, in that she will jump to an assumption. Why? Daida Salakamid Rava. The Gemara tells a story about a woman going to Rava. Amrle Baali Meis Barav. And she reports that her husband died in a famine. Amrullah. So Rava does the following. Now this dialogue between Rava and this woman is brilliant. Because what Rava is going to do is he's going to ask questions, but really he's not really asking the questions. He is actually digging for more information. So Amrullah, Shabri Avad Dishiz after Nafshech. So Rava says to her, oh, Baruch Hashem, I can't believe you survived. That's great. Sagadach de Bahu Porta did Nefafisa de Shavakdale Havachaye. Do you really think that with that little amount of flour that he was left with, do you think he could have survived with that? Meaning, well, he for sure is dead, right? There's no way he could have survived with the little flour that was left with him. So Amrle, so she says to him, "Marnam yada dechi agavna lochaye." Oh, you know that you can't live on that little amount of food. You meaning she says to Rava, "You're right. There's no way he could have survived." What she just did in that little dialogue is she had just admitted that she didn't actually see her husband die. What she did is she somehow was saved. She somehow was rescued. But all she saw was her husband dying from the famine with a little bit of flour left, but she didn't actually have visual confirmation that her husband died. Okay, so what she did is she leapt to an assumption. So now Rava understands that Ravon is just like Milchama. Now again, I'm always a little hesitant that the halach is going to change based on one anecdote. I know the Gemara that sounds like from the Gemara that based on this one anecdote, so therefore Rava changed an entire position. So I can only conjecture. It's a little bit of speculation on my part. Hopefully it's not reckless, but I can only conjecture that there may have been other factors that also led him to this conclusion, and not just the one anecdote. But either way, Hadama Rava Ravon Griyam Mechama. Rava actually said that that famine is actually worse than Mechama. Why? The Ilu Mechama Ki Amra Meis Bali Be Mechama Hu Dola Mehemna Ha Meis Amitaso Mehemna. So Rava says that when reporting that my husband died in war, so Hu Dola Mehemna Ha Meis Amitaso Mehemna. Rava says, look, when it comes to war, generally speaking, we're going to assume that she leaps to conclusions. But let's say she does the following. She actually reports that me and my husband were doing great, marriage was fine, we were in a war-torn area, and I actually saw my husband die. She says that. Right? Meis al mitaso. He died, I saw him die. So, in Milchama, she's going to be believed. Okay, the ilu gabe ra'avon, but when it comes to famine, ad amra meis ukvartiv. When it comes to famine, even that's not going to be enough. Famine, you need her to say, not only did I see my husband die, but I buried him as well. Okay, Rashi writes over here. Why do you?
Huh? What does that add?
Yeah, right. Rashi writes over here. Meis ukvartiv the ilu b'mechama sar shema baruch v'nitzal ava berav he svura ich yechia. Because in a case of famine, she'll be more ready, more prepared to leap to an assumption than in the case of Mechama. In the case of Mechama, where she actually says, I saw him die, so we can only assume that if she's saying she saw him die, and she's attesting to the fact, not only that he was injured, but he actually died, okay, that's what she's reporting. But in the case of famine, it's famine, I guess... The death and famine is so slow and so inevitable that she will arrive at the conclusion that her husband's dead even prior to the fact that she actually saw that he died. And even if she says that she saw she died, that could also be a small stretch of the truth. He was on the verge of death. He looked at, so in other words, even if famine, Rabbah then came to the conclusion that famine is worse than Milchama in the sense that she'll be more inclined to bend and stretch the truth than even in the case of Milchama. By the way, the Gemara just taught us, and I'm going to show you Rashi later on as well, that even in the case of Milchama, our Mishnah says she's not believed in Milchama. That's not perfectly accurate. Meaning, if she says that her husband's died, and that's all she provides, it's the only information she provides, she's not going to be believed. But as the Gemara just pointed out, if she says that her husband's dead, and I saw him die, and she has, and she reports visual confirmation of the death of her husband, even in Mahama she's going to be believed. Mapolis. Okay, what if the house caves in? And Harayku Mechama. So the Gemara says we're going to treat that in terms of a credibility standpoint, just like Mechama. The Amra Bidadami, because again, she's going to lead to an assumption. She didn't see her husband die, but the house caved in, and so therefore she's only going to be left to assume that the husband died. Okay, I think of 9/11 when I see these Gemaras in terms of, you know, the assumption. Okay, so Shiluach Nechashim Ve'akravim. What if it's an infestation of snakes and scorpions? So once again, it's like Mechama in the sense that she's not afforded the credibility because she'll report about the husband's death even though she didn't see it. The Amra b'dadami. Okay, because she's going to say, I think my husband died. Look, there's no way he could have survived it. Okay, so just like Mechama, she's not afforded the credibility. Dever. What about a plague? So Amrila Harei Kamachama, Amrila Ina Kamachama. So on this, the Gemara says unclear. We can go either way on Dever, on a pestilence, on a plague, okay, Ebola, if you will. So Amrila Harehu Kamachama, the Amri bid the dummy. Okay, so on one hand, we can make the argument that it's like Melchama. She'll come back and she'll report that her husband's dead. He was infected. Everyone else was dying. My husband must have died as well, and she'll leap to a conclusion. That's one argument. The other argument is no, it's not like Mechama. Why? Because there's an old expression, says the Gemara, and people buy into this old expression, which is Shev Shnein Havamusna. There could be pestilence in the world for 7 years, but people don't die before their time. Meaning that I know that there's an infection, there's a pandemic, there's an epidemic, but and people are dying, but I'm telling you, when it's my time to go, it'll be my time to go. And people believe, okay, it's an old expression, people believe that that's so. So in this case, if they went to an area that's not war-torn, but infection-torn, never. So she's not going to come back and say, oh, I think my husband died. You know, he was infected. No, she will believe the expression that everyone subscribes to, that people don't die before their time, in the face of Dever. Okay. Ibai lehu. Hichzikihi mochama ba'olamahu. Okay. What we know, what we learned together in the Mishnah, is that if there's war, either between her and her husband, or in the area that they went to, she's not believed. Okay. If there's shalom, they are believed. The default assumption is, like we saw in the beginning of the Gemara, is that there's shalom between she and her husband in the area that they went to. The Gemara now wonders out loud. The Gemara says, what if she comes back from a trip, she reports the death of her husband, and she also offers a little bit more information? I know you didn't know this, but the area that we went to was war-torn. So she's the one now reporting that there was war in the area that they went to. We didn't know this otherwise. She was the one who was telling us this information. So, right, correct. So do we extend her credibility, which is not normally extended? Gemara's question. She could have kept her mouth shut. That's on the politics of the area. So ibaye lahu or ibaye lay. Hechzikihi mochama ba'olamahu. What if she is the one testifying that there was war? Mi amrina mali l'shakir the ibaye amr shalom ba'olam. She could have said there was peace. Now that line of the Gemara is a little tricky, meaning usually migu is based on a fact of something she could have said, which.
Would have been more.
Right, which is unverifiable. Here, the Gemara is giving her a migul based on something that she's saying, which, you know, outside another source can come in along and say, I don't know what she's talking about. That area is crazy. Right? But still, I get the basic idea of the Gemara. You see, Tosus has that discussion as to how, what kind of migul is this really. But the ibay amr shalom ba'olam odilma kevin deichziki amri be'dadami v'loasi. V'lo asi ma'li l'shaker umarech es kasei. The Gemara sees both sides of this question. Meaning on one hand, she didn't have to say anything. And if she didn't say anything, she would be believed. On the other hand, she now informed us that there's war going on over there. So there's war going on over there. Oh, so then maybe she leapt to an assumption. It's true that we only know that there's war because she said so, but once she laid out the groundwork that there's war, so then maybe she leapt to an assumption. Tashma. The Gemara says, okay, let's see. Let's see if we can resolve this question. Ishanu alanu bayis. Ishanu alayim ma'ara. Hu meis ve'ani nitzalti. Let's say she makes the following testimony. There was a fire in the house, there was a fire in the cave. Okay, funny place to live, but in other words, they were in an area, a house or a cave, place went on fire. She says, I survived, but my husband died. Eino ne'emenis. She is not believed. Now, in this case, what happened? She's the one providing the information. Meaning she could have just come back and she could have just simply said, my husband died. Period. Which is interesting, by the way. It sounds like from the Gemara that there's no responsibility or obligation on Basin to ask follow-up questions. Certainly sounds that way. Okay. But in this case, in the Braisa, she's giving the background information. She's the one saying, it was a fire in the cave, in the house. And what did the Braisa say very clearly? She's not believed. Because it's a fire, and because she didn't have visual confirmation that her husband died, and she's just assuming that her husband's dead, and she's reporting the assumption, so the Braisa says, Eino ne'emenis. Why? So if that's true, let's go back to the question of the Gemara. Milchama should be the same. If she's the one providing the background, so that should discredit her statement. Shani Asam, Damalaki, Hechdilichais, Israchesh Nisa, Lidide Nami, Israchesh Nisa. So the Gemara says it's different. In the case of the fire, so it's different because a counter argument to her claim that her husband's dead is, you know, I know your husband's dead, but you survived.
Yeah.
Right. How did you get out? However you got out? Husband may have gotten out the same way. That's why she's not believed. Which is interesting. In the case of Melchama, the Gemara doesn't offer this argument. Right? In the case of Melchama, we don't question, well, how did you get out? I'm not totally clear about the difference, but I'm guessing that...
Because the house was localized.
That's what I was going to say. Right. Oh, good. Phil, that's what I was going to suggest. No, it's fine. Good. Great minds. At least one great mind. Okay, and, you know, hopefully I'll catch up. But but maybe the house is a contained area, and so therefore, look, I don't know how you got out, but however you got out, you know, you can only imagine he got out as well. Mechama is a more spread out area. It's very, you know, okay. Anyway, Tashma. Naflo aleinu ovdi kochav. Naflo aleinu listim. Hu meis v'nitzalti. So now the Gemara gives us another braisa. She comes back and she gives us the following report. We were assaulted by ovdi kochavim, by robbers. My husband died and I was saved. Ne'emenis. So here, it's interesting. What does the braisa say? She's afforded credibility. So once again, she was the one providing the background information, and she also reported that her husband died. So Hasim Kedra Avidi, Dama Ravidi, Isha Klei Zayin Allah. So the Gemara says, yeah, but in that case over there, it's totally believable that her husband died and she did not, because a woman is armed. Okay, this expression, Isha Kli Zayin Allah, we're going to see that expression again in the Masechta of Avodah Zarah. What does that mean, a woman is armed? Kli Zayin Allah. So take a look at Rashi over here. Nope, Rashi over here just tells you to take a look at the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. Okay, take a look at the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. So Rashi over there says that Kli Zayin Allah, the Ovdei Kochavim, the non-Jews or the Listim, are interested in her. Right, and Kli Zayin over here is an expression of the Gemara. It doesn't mean that she's actually armed. It just simply means that she has something for them that'll prevent them from wanting to kill her, as opposed to her husband. The husband just simply serves as a threat. So they can easily envision that they would kill the husband and not kill her. So in that case over there, based on that context, it's easy to believe and realize that what she's telling is the absolute truth. Okay, terrible story. The Gemara reports. There was a man at the end of the wedding. The wedding hall caught fire. Amr lehu devasayu chazu gavrai. And she's screaming and she's saying, there's my husband. Asu chazu gavrai charucha deshadei. Upisasa diada deshaja. It's just a horrific story. So she sees the charred remains of a human, and on top of that, they also see a hand. Okay, the remains of a hand, a human hand. So Savar of Chiyah. Now, I don't know why there are no other eyewitnesses account, but again, in our context, the Gemara over here is zooming in on a halachic point, which is, right now, she's the only one confirming the death of her husband. She didn't actually see the husband die. What she saw was that the hall went on fire, and all they have now is forensic evidence that human remains. But no dental record. We don't know that those human remains were actually the corpse of her husband. So, Savar Rav Chiya bar Rav Lameimer Hainu Ishanu Aleinu Bais Ishanu Aleinu Ma'ara. So the Gemara says that I'm sorry. Rav Chiya bar Avin thinks that this case is similar to the previous brisa, or I should say now two brisas ago, where the case was they were in a fire in a house. She survived. She said, "I survived, but I'm guessing my husband died." So what do we say in that case? She's not believed. Just like you survived, your husband could have survived as well. So Amar Rav Amidami. And what the Gemara, I'm sorry, let me just finish the sentence. And what the Gemara is thinking is, in this case, same thing. That we're going to assume that she leapt to a conclusion, but she didn't actually see visual confirmation that her husband died.
Why do you need this case?
Well, this case actually happened. Meaning the Braisa was telling us the Halacha, and now what the Gemara is doing is trying to make an application of the Braisa in this particular case. Amar Rava, mi dami, Rava says, no, they're not comparable. Hasam lo kamru chazu gavrai, chazu gavrai. No, and over the, in that case, she wasn't screaming, there's my husband. Over here, she was screaming, there's my husband. She had some sort of visual confirmation. She wouldn't, it wasn't confirming that her husband's dead, but she saw that her husband was actually in the fire. And on top of that, there's also a corpse, human remains. It's unidentifiable, but the human remains.
I know I just read
a lot of Gemara, but basically, what's Rav Chiya's counter argument? Counter argument goes like this: look, she didn't see the husband actually die. As far as the human body, the human remains in the house, that could be someone trying to go in and save the husband. Not necessarily the husband. As far as the additional hand, maybe we can conjecture that hand actually belonged to the husband. In the fire, he lost the hand. And because he was so embarrassed that now he is handless, he's now what the Gemara described as a mum, as a bal mum, as a blemished person. He was embarrassed, he was humiliated, and maybe he ran off. Now, what the Gemara is not suggesting, of course, is that this is what actually happened, but the Gemara is just simply saying, we don't know. Meaning, all we're able to do with this questioning is just simply make the determination that there is no determination to make. We simply don't know. And if she didn't see the husband actually die, and all she was reporting is that there was a fire, and I know I was there, and I know my husband was there, I didn't see his actual death, and I escaped, so that in of itself is not going to be enough testimony and credibility to say that her husband actually died.
Isn't the problem here because there are basically two bodies, or at least one body and
one in a hand.
Means there had to be someone else in there.
Right. So again, so what the Gemara is doing is providing some explanation. Again, the plausibility of it is not the issue, but at least there's some explanation of what's that body and what's that hand. As long as we have some explanation as to what that is, so then we just simply don't have enough evidence and information that her husband's dead. And she didn't see it. She didn't see the husband actually die. That's really the key issue. Correct, correct.
But I mean, there was no hand there.
No, it just, again,
the hand proves that there was somebody else. So it could have been
right, understood. I'm going to say the same thing I said to Danny, meaning this case actually happened. So they were dealing with the case that actually happened.
But if there were no hand...
No, the same thing. In other words, there could be conjecture. Fine. E bai lahu. Next question up for discussion of the Gemara. So again, what we've been doing since the beginning of the Perek is understanding when a wife can testify that her husband is dead, and when she is not afforded that credibility. And again, a lot of it has to do, it's a finesse halacha. It has to do with the context of the marriage, the context of the area that they went in, and looking at when she will not leap to a conclusion versus when she will leap to a conclusion. And if there's a scenario in which she will leap to a conclusion, so then she's not extended that credibility. Okay, it's a lot of finesse. If she's not afforded the credibility, so then she can't. Oh, I don't know. I don't know. The Amoraim were arguing back and forth. So we're back to a discussion that we had now back in the 10th parak, but revisiting this discussion here in the 15th parak. Let's say it's not the wife testifying, it's a witness testifying, but the witness is coming forward and saying that the husband died and he's also testifying to Shas Mechama. Or let's make it easier, let's say we know it's a Shas Mechama. Okay, and there's one witness testifying. So, do we say the same halachas for the one witness that we say for her? So the Gemara says, let's see. Mao time of day dachan. Ma'am and Mishub de Milsa Davida Lugluihu, Lo Mishakir, Hachanami Lo Mishakir. Eidachad is afforded the credibility. Why? Because Milsa Davida Lagluye. Because he's putting himself out in a position where it's going to become verifiable. At a later point in time, if the husband comes back, boy, is he going to look dumb. And not only is he going to look dumb, it's clear that he's lying. So does that beef up his credibility, even though normally we need two? In this case, one is belief, because it's Milsa David Alugluye, so he's not going to lie. So here also, even if it's a war-torn area, still, he's only going to testify if he knows for sure that the husband's dead. Questionable whether that belongs in the Gemara or not. But lo daiku minstava. Okay, but maybe the other way to understand Eid Echad, and again, this Chakira the Gemara said earlier. We're reviewing a Chakira of the Gemara we said earlier. The other reason behind Eid Echad is not so much that we're believing the one witness, but the one witness is going to force her to investigate the matter fully. She'll investigate the matter fully, and then she'll make the determination that her husband's actually dead. And again, what's going to motivate her to make that determination is the fact that she's going to be penalized on the other side, meaning if she remarries and her husband comes back. And so therefore, or it's not really the one witness what we're extending credibility to. It's really her that we're extending credibility to. And so therefore, in this case where Shas Mechama, if she were there and she were escaping from Shas Mechama, she wouldn't be believed. So too the Eid Echad, because the Eid Echad is not really pinning the credibility on the Eid Echad. It's the Eid Echad and then her doing her due diligence. Amar Rabbi Mechama Tashma, the Gemara says, okay, let's see. I'm Rabbi Akiva Kshirati Lanarda La Bershan. I went to the town of Narda, the city of Narda, in order to intercalate the year. Okay, Tosfos discusses here, discusses in Sanhedrin as well. Intercalation, Ibrashana, can only be done in Eretz Yisrael. What's Rabbi Akiva doing in Narda, intercalating the year? Okay, Tosos bothered by that question, but we're gonna press on. Matzasi Nechemi Ish Beistali Vamr Li. So I bumped into Nechemia, and he asked me the following question: Shemanti Shemasina Seisha Beretz Yisrael Api Eid Echad Ela Rav Yehuda Ben Bava. I heard that in Eretz Yisrael we won't allow a woman to remarry based on the testimony of one witness, other than the opinion of Rav Yehuda Ben Bava, meaning he allows for that. But I've heard that a lot of Tanaim living in Eretz Yisrael don't agree with that position. V'nimati lo kein advarim. And Rabbi Kiva says, I said to him, yeah, you're right. It's not everyone's opinion. Amali amor lehem mishmi atem yodim amedina azu mishubeshes begayasos kach mekublan mi Rabbi Gamliel zaken shemasin aish al pid echad. So Rabbi Kiva then was told by Nehemiah that I want you to go back to Eretz Yisrael and I want you to tell them the following, that I have a tradition from Rabbi Gamliel zaken that a woman could get remarried based on the testimony of one witness. Meaning, I don't want to hear that in Eretz Yisrael, it's only Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava's position. It's not true. Rabbi Gamliel said it as well. We've seen so many times in the Gemara that when Rabbi Gamliel says something, like, done. This discussion over. Sorry. Sorry. My Medina Meshubeshes, Begayasos. Now, in that very powerful statement that Nehemiah made to Rabbi Kiva, he says, you should know, I live in Narda, it's crazy over here. Mishubeshes Gayasos. Marauders, right, robbers, but not just robbers. Meaning,
Syria.
Yeah. Okay, so the it's crazy over here. By the way, you realize we're talking about Iraq, basically. Okay, so right, 1,500 years later, and we're still, no, more than 1,500 years. We're going back to Rabbi Akiva. Okay, so about 2,000 years later, we're still in the same area. So, but anyway, kach mekubani shemasin api erechad, ama erechem emen. And what do you see over here? That even though area's crazy, it's war-torn, still we believe one witness. Oh, okay, fine. So even though the wife herself is not believed when she's reporting coming back from a war-torn area, but Eid Echad is believed. So Rava says, look, I'm not buying that because read carefully what he said. He didn't say, this halacha would be true anywhere there's gayasos. He was saying here in Arda. What does that mean? So Ella Amar Rava Achi Kama. Rava says, I'll tell you what he meant. Atem yodim shemedina zim shubeshes bayasos velo efshar li lemishbak in shibesi umaisi kama rabbanon. All Nehemiah was saying is, I wanted to go report this myself to Eretz Yisrael, but I can't travel. It's crazy. So I want you to be my messenger. So that's, I want you to report it in my name. But he wasn't saying that anywhere where it's a war-torn area, one witness is believed. All he was saying was, I can't go there and report because of the craziness. But the halach is that a woman can marry based on the testimony of one witness. Okay, so at this point in time, question on the table, which we're going to leave till tomorrow, is we know that a woman reporting that her husband's dead is only afforded credibility if the area they go to has shalom and the marriage has shalom. Is one witness better than the wife in this regard, where the one witness is reporting that the husband died in a war-torn area? Is he extended a little more credibility than the wife herself would? The Gemara asked that question. We try to resolve it unsuccessfully. We'll try again tomorrow.